My name is Owen Thompson with the Local Journalism Initiative. The organization Two-Spirited People of the First Nation are celebrating 1 year of operation for their crisis response team. The organization celebrated 1 year of service on September 22, 2023, despite them officially beginning operations on July 11th of 2022. They set up their crisis team in line through the Toronto Community Service Pilot, the TCCS, and 2S1Ns program, Kamawizmiwinagidiwendiying, with the phone line starting in June 2023. Two-Spirit of the First Nation is one of four pilots in the city that are participating in the program. TCCS goal is to create a new, alternative approach to responding to someone in crisis that focuses on health, prevention, and well-being. I spoke to Sage McMahon, the director of the program, about the history of the crisis team and what the future looks like for them.
Okay, would you mind introducing yourself?
Hello, my name is Sage McMahon. I'm a Anishinaabe player from Treaty 3 Territory, Rainy River First Nations, and I am the director of the Indigenous-led Crisis Response Team, TCCS, with Two-Spirited People of the First Nations.
And Two-Spirited of the First Nations has a crisis line which has recently just celebrated its first year of service. Yeah, how long did it take for the crisis line to get started?
So we have a crisis team and a crisis line. The crisis team has operated since July 11th of 2022. And we started development of that in January. And then our crisis line launched, I believe, at the beginning of this June. And that is a direct line to our team for Indigenous-specific mental health crisis response. So we have kind of two things happening simultaneously. The crisis team launched first, and then just June, the crisis line launched as well.
Why is it important to have these crisis lines and these crisis teams in Toronto?
Yeah, I think our Indigenous community has been asking for an alternative response to police for a really long time, and our team provides an Indigenous-specific response that is grounded in the responses from community through community consultation. And our team, many of whom identify as Indigenous, are able to provide a support that supports people over a continuum. It supports people beyond just a one-time interaction and really allows folks to get access to the supports they need while really maintaining their autonomy and empowering them to make decisions that they need and want with us walking alongside them.
I think you just briefly touched on it there, but there's a continual service. So what makes the crisis line, the crisis team, different, say, from any other crisis line or crisis team?
Sure, yeah. So we operate 24/7. In Toronto, we are consent-based, and so an individual has to consent to engage in our services. We are Indigenous-specific. We do respond to anyone within Division 14, but we do have an Indigenous-specific lens and a holistic lens. It's the way we operate. We are a non-enforcement approach. So if an individual doesn't want to work with us, doesn't want our response, we don't enforce that upon them. We really are looking to meet folks where they're at, provide the supports that they're requiring, that they're asking for, and really just to walk alongside someone in a moment of crisis.
How many calls would you say you get a month?
It's really dependent. It varies month to month. In just over a year, we have over 2,000 calls.
And is that a lot for a starting crisis line and crisis team?
So those 2,000 are just for the crisis response, so the mobile response team. We have different data for our crisis line. I think it has been steady. We of course, want more calls getting towards us. And I think as more and more people become aware of the service and more calls diverted from 911, our calls will increase, but it's definitely been steady.
And you mentioned that there's a continual aspect to how your team does things. So what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so we have case managers who provide longer term support to individuals who are requesting longer term support. We can provide intensive case management for up to 3 months. Typically, we go quite a bit longer than that. So that folks can get access to all the supports they need, whether it be housing or substance use supports or access to a primary care physician or mental health supports. Our case managers work one-on-one with individuals to get them access to those programs and services that they need. And then when an individual is ready to transition out of that case management, more intensive case management, they can transition into peer support. So we have our peer support workers who do kind of less frequent check-ins of just checking in with the individual, how they're doing, providing that kind of one-on-one emotional check-in and support. And if an individual needs to transition back into more intensive case management, we can do that as well.
With all these continual support, when that's helping somebody, what does that look like?
Yeah, it looks different for every person. And our response is different based on the individual, how much support they need, what types of support they need. A lot of it is just one-on-one listening and us responding. What do you need? Oh, you don't have adequate housing? Okay, well, we're going to work with you to get you into some housing or get you some housing options. It's providing people with more options and more information and really allowing them the space to decide what works best for them and what types of resources and supports they're in need of to access.
What has been the response from the Indigenous community in Toronto about this, your team and the line?
It's been really great so far. I think what we've heard from folks is that they're really wanting this to expand across the city because right now it's not available across the full city for community. And so folks are really hoping that it gets expanded and that it becomes available within their areas. We know that our Indigenous community is located across the full city. As much as we have areas where we congregate, we are a people that are pretty mobile across the city. We live in many different areas of the city. And so having Indigenous-specific crisis response services available across the city is really becoming a priority for us because that's what we're hearing from community. In terms of the reception of the services thus far, folks have been really supportive of it and really engaged in the process as well.
What would it take to expand to service the rest of Toronto?
It would take an expansion to the budget that we have from the city. And then once that is expanded, we would have to expand our team, do a lot of hiring, find a couple new locations and really go from there doing outreach and engagement across the city.
This week is currently Mental Health Awareness Week. Are there any plans or any outreach you're doing this week?
Yeah, nothing different than normal. We are operating 24/7 just as normal. We do outreach numerous times a week within our divisional areas and within some of the Indigenous agencies across the city. So we'll continue to do that this week and engage with community members.
And what made the crisis line and your crisis team very interesting to me in regards to it all is it comes from a Indigenous approach. So why is it important to have an Indigenous approach within Toronto?
Because there's Indigenous people in Toronto and Indigenous folks who we consulted with and who the city consulted with and who other agencies consulted with said they really needed a response to be grounded in an understanding of history, an understanding of culture, an understanding of our identities. And so in order for it to be grounded in all those things, it really had to be grounded in community and it really had to be reflective of community and responsive to community. And so for us, that really just meant having Indigenous folks on our team, ensuring that we have cultural components ingrained in our response and who we are as a service. It means having collective buy-in from community members and having our advisory committee. It means taking ongoing feedback from community and seeing how they've felt when they've accessed the service. It means really listening to community and allowing community to communicate to us what they need from the service and doing our best to make that happen. Having a response that is holistic was really important to us to be able to support all the aspects of one individual and to make sure that we aren't being solely clinical in how we respond to mental health. We need to look at individuals as whole individuals who live in the context of their communities, amongst their families or their friends or their neighbors, and how mental health can impact not just an individual, but the communities around them as well.
I think you also mentioned it in regards to the, with the holistic approach, there's also the cultural aspect of it. And there's a lot of different Indigenous communities within Toronto. It's not just, it's very much a cultural hub of Indigenous communities. So how do you go about educating your responder and your team to the various different Indigenous communities?
Yeah, well, we have members of our team who reflect the diversity within our community. We don't have just one identity on our community or on our team. We have a team that really reflects the diversity that is within our community. So a lot of it is like one-to-one knowledge sharing with one another. And then we also have ongoing, we have elders come in, we do trainings and team building type exercises. We work with Weaving Wellness, that is an Indigenous specific mental health team, to provide our team support and do some of that debrief and mental health support for our team. And then as an agency, we engage in a lot of cultural programming, and we have facilitators from various nations. So we encourage our team to access our programming and sit in and listen and learn and participate as well.
Because your organization does a lot, and it seems like this crisis line and your crisis team also do a lot as well. So what are some common misconceptions regarding the team and the line?
I don't know that we have a lot of common misconceptions. I think at times we get called to remove people from specific spaces or to enforce some type of bylaws or policies or procedures in specific spaces, but we do our best to remind folks that we are a consent-based service and that we operate on the consent of the individual accessing our service. We are non-enforcement, and so we cannot enforce, for instance, somebody to leave a space or somebody to follow specific policies or rules. But what we can do is meet with somebody, check in with how they're doing, try and get them to a safe space, try and provide any immediate needs they have, whether it be food, water, sleeping bag, clothes, harm reduction supplies, and then get them access to someone who can do long-term support through our case management.
You mentioned it a few times now in regards to your line being and your team not doing enforcement. Is that the case for other crisis lines?
For instance, a lot of mental health calls get responded to by TPS. And so TPS has a much different mandate than we would, and police have a much different mandate than we as a non-enforcement consent-based approach would have.
Now that's been a year. What is the future of your crisis line, your crisis team looking like?
I think we're really hopeful that we'll be able to expand across the city and that our crisis line will be able to expand in terms of its hours. Our crisis line right now operates 12 hours a day. So really hopeful that we'll be able to get it up to 24 hours a day. And that our crisis team, instead of operating within 14, 51, and 52, will operate citywide. And that's really what the next goals are.
You said that the phone line only runs for 12 hours. What's the 12-hour window?
2 p.m. to 2 a.m.
And if you don't mind me asking, when do most calls come in?
It's really quite random, to be honest. We chose 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. for the crisis line because that is peak calls for, I met with a few other crisis lines and emergency lines, and that is peak calls typically for them. For us, it's only been a few months, so we can't really determine when a majority of calls are coming in or what the patterns are. And in terms of our mobile response team, it really is quite random, not necessarily a pattern to pull out from there.
What is your mobile response team?
That's our mental health crisis team.
All right, that's actually all my questions. Do you have any final comments you'd like to leave off on?
No, I don't think so.